Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Busy show for us today. Sean Bailey, former Georgia wide receiver, coming up later on. He had a big performance for the Dogs in the 2005 SEC Championship win over LSU. He'll reminisce about that and talk about how the wide receivers can contribute to a Georgia win on Saturday. We'll do that coming up. Of course, Jeff Sintel here today as well for a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. That's coming up soon on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. But let me begin this way, if you don't mind. David Pascal, good writer for the Chattanooga paper, asked a question to Georgia defensive lineman Michael Barnett yesterday that kind of produced an answer that kind of got some attention, and I thought it was worth us spending a minute talking about it here on Dog Nation Daily today. Barnett, on the subject of being an underdog, and that seems to be a role that he is embracing, the way that a lot of football players have over the course of the years. Here is Michael Barnett on that topic.
I mean, ever since the year started, I feel like people has been counting Georgia out, so at the same, like, what's new? You feel me? Like, people are saying that, you know, we're not going to win, and then we're going in the season, we're playing good. People saying we're going to win, we're favored, and now you want to hop on the train. So at the same time, it's really about focusing on us and what we need to do to execute on the field and, you know, win.
So listen, what Barnett says there at the beginning, I don't think anyone's believed in us since the beginning of the year. This is kind of one of the most cliched things in football for a reason. I'm not mad at Michael Barnett for saying it. The temptation as a player to kind of always kind of fall into that of, hey, nobody believed in us. The only guys that thought we had a chance to win are right here in this locker room. I'm not mad at Barnett for feeling that way, and I'm sure he can point to lots of critics. There's been a lot of discussion about that, what the national media might have said about Georgia kind of writing them off along the way. However, while I'm not mad at Barnett for saying what he said, I do have, I don't know if you call this advice, maybe it's just an opinion, I think embracing the underdog role for Georgia here on Saturday, I think it's kind of a mistake. I think that Georgia would be better off this weekend not viewing itself as the underdog, even though, according to Vegas and my bookie and kind of all these, you know, other folks, by at least a touchdown, Georgia's the underdog. I think Georgia would do well not to embrace that role on Saturday and pretend that they are the favorite, pretend that they are expected to win, even if there are plenty of people around the country who don't think they will. And by the way, the topic of being an underdog continued when Georgia players met with the media yesterday. Here is Tyler Simmons kind of on that same subject.
I feel like we definitely will. Coach Martin will express. I'm sure he'll express it to us a little bit and, you know, kind of get guys going. But the biggest thing is doing it for your brothers, not doing it because you're underdogs. It's doing it for the guys next to you. So
Tyler Simmons gives kind of an interesting answer there of, hey, we may be the underdogs, but this is about playing for the intrinsic motivation of performing for our teammates more so than being the underdog on Saturday. And I can understand where Simmons is coming from on that too. But once again, to me, this is not the best overall perspective that Georgia could take into the game on Saturday, ignoring the status of being an underdog, not using that as motivation, not playing the nobody expected us to be here card, not playing the nobody thinks we can win this game card, the David versus Goliath card. Not playing that, I think, is the better overall way to do that. And when Kirby Smart spoke on the same subject on Monday, he kind of leaned into that direction a little bit. I'll explain coming up why this is so important, but first let me let you hear Kirby Smart on the topic.
We really don't bring that up. I mean, what we worry about is what do we got to do to execute well. And I don't get into who's favored by how many or underdogs. It's just not important because the people that make those decisions aren't in this room. They're not, like, in our meeting rooms. They're not in our meetings. They don't go through our practices. So we try to, you know, control what we can control with how we practice and how we get ready. And as many as the games we're favored in, it doesn't matter. So if you're not favored in it, it probably doesn't matter either.
So let me see if I can explain why it's sort of best to sort of either ignore the fact that you are an underdog or maybe even better, pretend that you are not. Pretend that you are the bull of the woods. Pretend that you are the team that's supposed to win this game. We have the tweet here from Chris Felica, our buddy the Bear from ESPN's College Football Game Day. During game weeks, he always kind of gives you lots of information, data about how games are going to play out. I thought this was really interesting. Felica tweeted yesterday that favorites have dominated the Power 5 championship games lately. 10-0 straight up, 8-2 against the spread the last 2 years, 17-1 straight up, and 13-5 against the spread since 2015. 2016. He says the only upset was Penn State as a two-point underdog over Wisconsin way back in 2016, which admittedly wouldn't be that big of an upset all the way around. So what Chris Felica says, if you had a choice of being the favorite in a conference championship game or being the underdog in a conference championship game, being the underdog is not the role you want to be in. It's the favorite role that you want to be in because those are the teams that are covering the spread. And for us, for this particular game on Saturday, more importantly, those are the teams who are winning games. And by the way, that kind of mentality of being the favorite kind of also plays in else to something else that Georgia has done pretty well over the years. And there's this kind of narrative that's out there that, well, Georgia's one of these teams that may build a lead, but it has a hard time holding on to those leads. The two games against Alabama in recent years would seem to be an example of that. The fact that Auburn and Texas A&M both made comebacks on Georgia, at least near comebacks at the end of the regular season, would seem to be a narrative of that. But the honest truth is the larger collection of data kind of confounds that expectation, because actually some of the better wins for Georgia in the Kirby Smart era have been wins that were built upon late, either come from behind wins, maybe the greatest one of the Kirby Smart era, the 2017 Rose Bowl. That's a game in which Georgia had to come storming back to beat Oklahoma. Look at the Florida game from 2018. Look at the SEC championship game from 2017. Those were close games early that became easy, comfortable Georgia wins late because of what Georgia was able to do over the course of the entirety of the game, playing better in the fourth quarter than it had in the first quarter. And I think there may be an attitude where that is also necessary against LSU on Saturday. But if LSU with its high-powered, prolific offense, if they come out and score 14 quick points and Georgia finds itself in a quick deficit, there'll be some thought process out there amongst some people of, well, I guess LSU really was better than Georgia all along, and I guess Georgia's going to have to pack it up and go home. They can't win this game. That's why embracing the underdog role doesn't really always work quite so well, especially if you get down early in a situation like that. I think that the Georgia coaches and players, regardless of what the outside noise is in the national media, and it's sometimes regardless of what the outside noise is from the Georgia fans who've watched this team the most closely, I think the Georgia players and coaches would do well to block all of that out. And inside the locker room, on the practice field here this week, approach this game from the standpoint of, this is where we expected to be all along. Back in July in the SEC media days, the idea of doing more and making this season a national championship season, capitalizing on what had been the close but no cigar moments of the last couple of years, Georgia wasn't worried about a team like LSU standing in its way back in July, nor should it be worried about that team right now. It may be just sort of objectively true that LSU is the favorite in this game, but I don't think that Georgia would do well to think of it that way. I think they would do well to think of themselves as where they expected to be all along, one game away from the college football playoff, and then going out there and playing that way on Saturday. Let me kind of shift gears now and kind of get back to a topic that's been big all week long. And yesterday, boy, hard not to notice some seeming contradiction in the way that Kirby Smart talked about Georgia running back DeAndre Swift and his injured shoulder. I'll play two clips side by side, and you can decide for yourself how things may have changed here, why things may have changed here. Is this all just, is it subterfuge? Is that the right word? All just subterfuge and gamesmanship from Kirby Smart? Is there a reason why the status is seemingly downgraded? Let me start with Smart's update on Swift's shoulder injury from after the game against Georgia Tech on Saturday. Pretty hopeful when Smart said this.
With DeAndre Swift, I think he's going to be fine. He's got a shoulder contusion, and we think he'll be fine. I think he should be back.
Think he'll be fine, think he should be back, no, nothing to see here, move along, nothing to worry about. Well, what about yesterday when Smart was asked about this once again? Now, it is fair to point out that maybe Smart's just tired of talking about this. He's been asked like five questions in 2 days when it comes to DeAndre Swift's shoulder. But if we take his words at face value, it is pretty obvious that Smart is giving a different answer now than he just gave there on Saturday. Here is Smart on Swift from Monday.
Hey, Coach, is there an update on DeAndre Swift's injury going into next game? I think it's pretty important.
Yeah, we're hopeful that he's going to be able to play.
And that's all Smart had to say about that. Now, we only played the audio clip on the show. Even though we're on video, we typically just use audio clips for Kirby Smart, not video clips. Smart, during this portion of the conversation, is kind of down there looking at his phone. So I don't know if he was just sort of bored with the whole thing, because he doesn't typically look at his phone during press conferences very much. I don't know if he's just bored with the whole topic, or if this is his way of saying, maybe things have gotten a little worse on the Swift front over the course of the last 24 hours. But for a guy that's probably at least somewhat tired of talking about this. The way in which you answered the question yesterday, doesn't that kind of force the question to now be asked again? Smart will speak with reporters again on Tuesday night. He has to be asked about it again, right? Now, I'm not exactly going to raise my hand to be the one to ask that question, but he's got to be asked the question again. Why don't you give a different answer on Monday than you gave on Saturday, and a little bit different than what you said on Sunday when you kind of doubled down on the idea that he would be fine? You know, I don't know. I mean, listen, I guess here's what I'll say for the positive on this, that once again, if you want to go back to July, SEC Media Days, when the whole do more mantra began, one of the things that we thought we knew about Georgia at the time was this is a team that's deep at running back. This is a team that's got nation's former number one back, Zamir White, James Cook, electric potential playmaker. You know, this is the kind of team that has those kinds of guys as backups. They may be third string, they may be fourth string, but that's the kind of depth you have there at Georgia. Well, if we thought that was true then, maybe it's still true in December, even though we haven't seen as much of those guys we want to. So one way or another, I expect Georgia to have a competent offense on the field on Saturday. And obviously, it's way easier and way better if that's led by DeAndre Swift. But it may be that Georgia a bit has to lean on what we thought it had going back to the summer, which is a deep, stable, deep crop of running backs. That is, after all, the Georgia brand. That's what the Kirby Smart success thus far has been built upon. And maybe if it's called upon on Saturday, some of these guys we haven't seen as much of yet, maybe it'll be equal to the task. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter at 10, radio noon, Athens Sports Radio 960, the Ref podcast, wherever you find them, including posting every day the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad to have you with us today, and we really appreciate Pella Window and Door for bringing it all to you. And, of course, Pella Window and Door's got a great offer for you right now. Locally owned company here in Georgia, but also kind of a national brand there as well, so you get the best of both worlds, including that really great local service from a family-owned company, and an incredible offer right now. As I said, 40% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for the next 48 months, but you've got to act right now. Take advantage of this because that offer expires on January the 9th. A couple different ways for you to get in touch, PellaSoutheast.us, that's the web address, PellaSoutheast.us, or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They are viewed to be the best. By the way, we had a great night last night on Road to Atlanta presented by Kroger. That's our show we're doing each night at 6 p.m. Look forward to seeing you there tonight as well. More recap from the day's events and kind of what went on as both Georgia and LSU get ready for the SEC Championship. We'll see you for Road to Atlanta presented by Kroger tonight at 6 p.m. And we'll talk to you more about our big event coming up Thursday at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners when Jeff Sintel joins us here in just a little bit. So that's going to be a lot of fun over the next few nights at 6 p.m. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here for a moment, and I want to turn our attention to the preparations on the LSU side of this. And there was something that Ed Orgeron said going back to Sunday that I thought was really interesting, and frankly, a very interesting mirror to some of the same kind of conversation that's happening in Georgia. We discussed before about the notion that Georgia's an underdog in this game and should it view itself as an underdog and why maybe some people think it is. Obviously, on the Georgia side of this, that's mostly due to the fact that folks with good reason have questioned the Georgia offense, a group that hasn't always played up to its seeming potential and kind of left something to be desired for the fans who care about the Dogs most. Well, over on the LSU side of things, there has been kind of the opposite side of the coin discussion. The LSU offense has set records. It's the LSU defense at times that has caused problems. One of the things we talked to John Stinchcomb about yesterday was whether the presence of this prolific offense, kind of a more finesse-y style of play, throwing the ball all over the yard, whether that hurts Georgia's, or I should say a team like LSU's chances to play good defense. We may not ever know the answer to that, but it's certainly true. As the offense for LSU has gotten better, the defense has seemingly gotten worse, except Ed Orgeron now believes that narrative is about to change. In much the same way that Georgia hopes its offense plays better when it matters most, Orgeron has essentially said the same thing about his defense. Here's what Orgeron said about that unit on Sunday.
You know, we have a saying there. We talk about blocking out the noise. And so it's very important, as you know, today, all the information that's out there. But I do believe, without us mentioning, there's internal motivation, and they want to definitely prove they can be an outstanding defense. And I do believe our best defensive games are yet to come.
So that's Ed Orgeron saying that he believes the best defense of the year for LSU is yet to come. And as I said before, it is really interesting how that narrative kind of compares to the Georgia narrative, where Kirby Smart hasn't said those exact same words, but he has said something pretty close to that. The idea that when it matters most, the Georgia offense may play better, may play up to a standard that it hasn't really set for itself all year long. I think that's a possibility really for both sides. And obviously, as a Georgia fan, I hope it's the Georgia offense that shows up here, not so much the LSU defense. But both sides have a chance to do that, because one player making one play can make all the difference. That's really what it comes down to. An LSU defender trying to get into the backfield and get a big sack, or, you know, putting a hat on a football and watching that thing fly in the air, or just getting a pass broken up when it really matters. You know, one play can make all the difference. And the same thing is true for the Georgia offense as well. One block perfectly executed downfield, opening up a running back for a longer run, a receiver going up and getting a football at its highest point, bringing that down. For two units that at different times, various times, have struggled this year, the chance to have one guy make one play could change the reputation for either of those units here this weekend. That's one of the reasons why the game is going to be so much fun to watch. We'll have more on the SEC Championship coming up a little bit later on. Let me also remind you of this real quick before we say hello to Jeff Sintel. You know, you've heard of Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and, I guess, Cyber Monday. Are you aware of Giving Tuesday, though? We're in the midst of Giving Tuesday right now, and as you're thinking about a place that you can give your money here on this Giving Tuesday, I know so many of you want to participate in that. Let me allow you to think about the UGA Alumni Association here for a moment, because all the great stuff that goes on at UGA, I'm talking about the research and the initiatives on the campus to make the world a better place, all of that is funded in many ways by the money donated to the UGA Alumni Association. So today is a great day to kind of find more about that and supporting UGA. Now, last year, there's over $224 million raised and donated for the University of Georgia. But this year, obviously, that number can even be in bigger and better. There can be more investments made, and really can kind of go into an idea that can kind of change lives and improve the future. You know, that's what a great university can do. And, of course, so many of the folks who listen in right now who care about the University of Georgia, proud of being UGA grads, they know how great and impactful this institution has been for so many people around the world. And so today is the day to support that and really ensure that the next generation of UGA student gets access to the same kind of education, and the next generation of society gets to a chance to be impacted by the University of Georgia the way that it has there in the past. So let me give you this website to make UGA your cause here on this Giving Tuesday, and you can find out more about how far your gift can go and what it can do for the community and the world at large. Here's the website. It's give.uga.edu. That's give.uga.edu, an invitation to support the UGA Alumni Association here on this Giving Tuesday. All right, we're very busy on our show today. As I said before, we will get Sean Bailey coming up in just a couple minutes, the former Georgia wide receiver. For now, though, here on this Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door, let's get ready to talk to Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel. Coming up in just a moment, we've been announcing our VIP giveaway for the Marlowe's event this Thursday in Peachtree Corners. We will announce the winner of that here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, let's talk some recruiting stuff with Jeff Sintel. And speaking of being a winner, Georgia was not the winner in the Zykevious Walker sweepstakes going back to Friday when Walker led a lot of Georgia fans into some disappointment when he chose Auburn over the Dogs. Jeff, this was a weird one because this is one of those that I think a lot of Georgia fans thought they had wrapped up for a long time. It's been a quiet stretch of 2020 recruiting news, and this is the time where it's supposed to kind of bear some fruit and show some good news. Admittedly, a lot of Dog fans were pretty disappointed about this on Friday night. How did you take the proceedings that led Walker to choose Auburn over UGA?
Well, Brandon, good morning, everybody. I guess I've always felt that with the Walker narrative, timeline, or whatever, I remember him telling me back in April, that, or early April, back in the spring, that he felt like Georgia was just waiting on him to commit. And I think the thing that not a lot of people will notice about or even chalk up to the Zykevious Walker recruitment, because he was, in Georgia fans' terms and the way I feel they would be recruiting, he was only a top 159, top 200 player, not an elite guy, which draws a lot of the attention. I do feel that I think Georgia's stretch now of 110 days without a recruit makes it feel like a lot of people, all they got was beanie weenies and pork and beans or something like that on Thanksgiving. But I think there was a disconnect somewhere between Georgia and Zykevious Walker. I think a lot of that had to do to pursuing other targets. I think a lot of that had to do to the way Walker's body changed from his junior year to his senior year, how he put on some weight. and Georgia just needed to figure out where he ranked on the board. And I think my take on that is I think that led to some of the disconnect or the way that allowed a school like Auburn and a school like Florida to really get in there and wrench him away from what was perceived to be a strong lean from Georgia just from this time last year. The other thing people don't take a lot into consideration is Georgia, Schley County and Ellaville is located in the state of Georgia,
sure,
but it's much closer to home for him to go to Auburn in this case where he resides for geography's sake. And I think that was also a factor is Georgia might lose an in-state product, but the reality here is it's a much closer proximity and location to Auburn in Jordan-Hare Stadium than it is to Sanford Stadium.
So I'm not quote-unquote worried about Georgia recruiting, speaking as a fan for a moment, because this class for Georgia is obviously going to kind of stack up as an elite one, no matter where it ends up being ranked and no matter kind of who's left on the board that joins it. This is going to be a very, very good recruiting class for Georgia, and it's worth saying that. However, honesty compels me to admit that there seems to be a degree of hubris involved for UGA's recruiting efforts if they would ever question whether they need a four-star defensive lineman in their own state, and they were ever kind of willing to make him not feel like a priority because they were recruiting other guys. Now, Jeff, I don't say that because I know for a fact that Zykevious Walker is going to be a great player in college. I tell you this all the time. I don't know if any of these guys can play until they get out there and actually do it. You just sort of bring as many good ones as you can and try to figure it out once they get here. So I don't know what Walker is going to be for Auburn or what he would have been for Georgia, but I do know this, that if you are operating on the assumption that Georgia may have 25 guys, or in this particular case, 23 guys better than a four-star defensive lineman in your own state, a position that you always need players at, and maybe more so this year because I guess there's a chance that Georgia's going to lose five off the roster from this current team. Jeff, I'm sorry, that's just hubris to ever think that you're going to find 23 guys more important for your program than a guy like Walker. It looks like Georgia made a mistake here in my mind.
Well, I just don't feel that way because there's a lot of different ways you have to evaluate Walker. Now, I think Walker's a great talent. He's good enough to maybe start 2 or 3 years in the SEC for the Tigers and maybe even get on an all-SEC team. But you've got to look at Georgia, by and large, with its recruiting cycle. They had Nazir Stackhouse committed in the state of Georgia, who's more of a pure defensive tackle, which is what the clear need is for this class. They already have Jalen Carter committed, the nation's number 6 defensive tackle, and a much clearer scouting read on his ceiling than you have with Walker playing in single-A football in Schley County. And then you have a guy like Warren Brinson, who just really went bonkers this year in his senior year at IMG Academy, playing a national schedule, going against Power 5 offensive linemen in practice every day. And Brinson's another guy that is committed to Georgia to play the defensive line. And then you've got, you know, Jamil Burrows, who was in and out of the class. That's another guy that maybe fit Georgia's needs. And then you have Georgia looking outward bound. And you have the thought there of Jordan Birch, higher-rated player than Zykevious Walker as well. I mean, it's just I don't want to simplify it by saying big boy recruiting. But for a lot of cases there with Georgia, we have to come back to the similar mantra. I don't think this staff is too keen on signing players that they don't think will compete and play right away within their first 2 years in the program. Let's also remember, Brandon, everybody will look at the current class count and they see 16 public commitments. Everybody else that's in the top 5 with Georgia has 20, 22, 24, 25 commitments. So that means Georgia has a lot of meat on the bone. But reminder here is that the graduate transfers of Eli Wolf and Lawrence Cager count against the 2020 signee count. So at the very least, Georgia's going to have to start thinking that they're at least 2 scholarships shy of whatever they were going to have in 2020. Also have to remember, there's a needed kicker coming up and open with Rodrigo Blankenship's scholarship expiring. In Georgia, by and large, I don't think a lot of people know for sure whether or not that Jared Zirkle, the commitment for Georgia, is going to be a full scholarship signee, whether he might be a blue shirt scholarship signee when he comes into the program as well. So another measure, by and large, we have to step back and think, how valuable is a top 150, 160 defensive lineman from a very small school in South Georgia? how valuable is that when you also have to remind themselves that Georgia would like to add at least one or two more speed receivers to this class, potentially a pair of elite tight ends, and it, with all the other needs that the class has still for the class of 2020, especially, folks got to forget, you know, there's the crystal balls and there's the top target lists we put out each week. But as it stands right now, Brandon, Georgia currently only has one defensive back commitment for the class of 2020 in Jalen Kimber. The secondary is also going to have to be addressed down the stretch as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess the point you and I disagree on, and it's fine, reasonable, people can disagree, but you asked the question of how valuable is Walker. I seem to think valuable enough that you probably want to sign him, just given the fact it's a position of rarity, consistently hard to find, sort of four-star level defensive lineman. This guy happened to be in your state, and you seem to think, you know, maybe not valuable enough to sign. It's not a bet on me that Walker's going to be, you know, a Derrick Brown All-SEC player. That's not what I'm trying to tell you here. I just think that I'm going to kind of err on the side of the big defensive lineman. In a class where it's best player available type, you know, mindset, I'm probably going to err on the side of the defensive lineman more than anything else. But let me kind of sort of push this forward on something else, too. And this is an area in which I kind of find myself aligning with fans. And I know some folks in the recruiting industry are going to maybe not like this, but it's just kind of, I think, the way a lot of fans are. There's been a lot of talk this cycle about so-called silent commitments and quietly stuff going on. And, boy, it's about to burst and everything's about to happen and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I think a lot of fans have grown skeptical of the notion of the silent commitment, the idea that a guy not announcing yet, but he's definitely coming to Georgia. Now, some of those guys are going to end up probably doing that. Some of them over the course of this cycle didn't. I think a lot of fans are kind of done with the notion of the silent commitment and a guy is kind of going through his process, but he's solid to Georgia. I just think there's some natural skepticism that arises from some of that, given the way – I'm talking about over the course of the last couple of years – given the way that some of these 2020 guys have seemingly evolved away from Georgia, I think the idea of, well, this guy's not saying it yet, but he's definitely coming to UGA. I just think there's going to be a lot of skepticism about that from a lot of fans moving forward, given the way that some of these 2020 guys have played out.
Well, there's definitely the mentality of the fan here. And I try to see it from both sides, given the information sources I have. But I think it is what it is, Brandon. If you have... I think there is a preconditioned success ratio in the minds of the fan base where they look at this class and they only see a couple of five stars committed right now. They only see a top five national ranking, and they feel like maybe there's, to use the chopping wood metaphor, I guess they feel like there's a whole lot of chunks out of that redwood still to be done for the 2020 class. And it's a preconceived notion of success, I feel, when you look at the ratio and Georgia only has a small amount of guys that they could potentially sign. Maybe only as few as seven left in this class that aren't publicly committed. They have to add a kicker. They have to add all those positions we just spoke about. But then you have to sit there and realize and you go, well, the guys you want, that the guys that you feel really good about, have a preconceived notion about the way they want to do things when they announce their commitments. I think that leads to the 105, 110-day stretch now it has been since Georgia had a commitment. It's one of those things that I think people don't remember right now how long it took Tyreek Stevenson to make his final decision or how long it took a guy like George Pickens to you know, basically flip from Auburn over the last 30 days of his recruitment. I think right now, in the moment, everybody just wants to hear good news, some news on the recruiting trail, which shows that the staff is moving forward to filling needs and creating a bigger class. But the reality here is I think those big booms that everybody likes to think about or those big Brandon goofaw chuckles are still on the way. It's just the timing of everything that leaves everyone much to be desired.
All right, so we'll obviously follow that as it gets here. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, speaking of Marlowe's, boy, great opportunity to kind of take care of the people in your life when it comes to holiday gifts. Marlowe's done this now for a couple of years, and this is always a lot of fun. When you buy a $50 Marlowe's Tavern gift card, they're going to give you, as a special thank you, a complimentary bottle of Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine. But the deal even gets bigger and better than that. When you buy a $100 Marlowe's gift card, not only do you get the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine, they're also going to give you a complimentary $20 gift card there as well, which if I'm going to make a suggestion, I'd say use that on yourself, but certainly enjoy the Marlowe's gift card and a great, great gift to give really anybody on your list this holiday season. Marlowe's, great opportunity there with both the $50 and the $100 gift card to enjoy the Michelle Brewed sparkling wine. And when you buy the $100 card, you also get the complimentary $20 gift card added there for you on that. That's a lot of fun. All right, Jeff, let's kind of go rapid fire here on a couple of different things because I know you got a lot going on here today. So let me start with Zachary Evans. He's going to make his announcement on Wednesday. There's almost no online chatter connecting him to Georgia here at the moment. So my simple question is, why is that? Why is Georgia and Zachary, why are Georgia and Zachary Evans no longer connected at all?
Wow, that's a broad, rapid-fire topic. I'm going to summarize it and say Georgia, at one time, which was seen as a contender for Zachary Evans and the crystal ball leader in all the online chatter, just decided to go in a different direction. There was off-the-field situations there with Zachary Evans, which probably – definitely fuel some of the potential reasons to do so, and that's just what it is. I mean, there was a point where he came to the cookout, seemed like he was very soon, shortly to be a Bulldog, and then it finally didn't happen. I think that speaks to the greater narrative when you look at a lot of these guys this year, Brandon. Just a lot of close but no cigar recruitments with elite prospects this year in 2020.
So just to be clear, it's more Georgia moving off of Evans than Evans moving off of Georgia?
That is my expectation. Okay. That is my read of the situation where Georgia, and he didn't even give Georgia a late visit. He had official visits to give. Zachary Evans didn't give official visits to a lot of the schools that were once in his top five. The top five always changed. They were in and out with the Texas schools. This is just one of those recruitments I will chalk away as a new high water mark for the more interesting recruitments. Recruiting cycles I've ever covered.
You mentioned Georgia fans wanting to see some good news with the 2020 class. I thought this was fun, although it's not indicative of anything necessarily, but most people right now have seen the Richard LeCount photo of him posing in front of the Tech fans who are behaving like Tech fans typically do. And I saw where Keely Ringo, the five-star cornerback, tweeted something about that and seemed to be really enjoying himself on that. He says the hate feels so good. This is a great photo, obviously, and a video that's kind of been out there of LeCount. And I think for a lot of Georgia fans who are hungry for something for the 2020 class, seeing Ringo tweeting about Georgia again, I guess they'll kind of take that for something anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's the online chatter you like to see when you see prospects that seem to have a bond with other prospects in the program, making note of things they see on social media. I'm sure you've shown the viewers of your program recently how Keely Ringo was wearing Georgia gloves at a recent playoff game for Swaro High. I mean, Ringo is a definitely coveted recruit. We were talking about defensive backs in the earlier segment, and he's the guy that's on the top of the board for everyone in the entire country. You see Texas kind of imploding with a five-loss season, firing the defensive coordinator, massive staff upheaval happening there for Texas, and then it seems like Georgia's primary contender for Keely Ringo down the stretch is now no longer Texas at all, but it is now the Oregon Ducks.
Hey, real quick, Jeff, because I know you're busy. Eric Reed is a guy, one-time Ole Miss commit. This is a safety. Seems like, based on some of the stuff you've written in the forum at forum.dognation.com, Georgia may be getting in the mix here. What can you tell us about a name that I don't believe that you and I have talked about before, and that's Eric Reed?
Yeah, he was on a late, also considered edges from a while back. He was committed to give Georgia a visit. I believe it was right around the South Carolina game. He was committed to Ole Miss for a time. Obviously, Matt Luke's situation has led him to open up his recruitment back up. He's a safety, Brandon. He's a four-star. He's a number 209 overall safety for this class. Plays for Calvary Baptist out of Shreveport in Louisiana, another area where Cortez Hankton does a lot of good work for Georgia on the recruiting trail there in the Pelican State. He's a guy that told me last night that not only is he decommitting from Ole Miss, but it seems like a lot of the signs point to him eventually choosing, either Auburn or Georgia. And he told me that he will give Georgia an official visit late in December, which would probably be that December 13th weekend after the SEC championship game, for Georgia to take a good look at building or maybe finalizing a relationship there for Eric Reed as the only safety, true safety in the class.
All right, so that'll be one worth following. And, of course, a chance to talk about more of this kind of stuff coming up on Thursday for our Marlowe's matchup, part of our Road to Atlanta series here this week, 6 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners. Now, the address here is 5210 Town Center Boulevard, 5210 Town Center Boulevard in Peachtree Corners. It'll be me, Jeff Sintel, and, of course, our buddy, the former Georgia All-American John Stinchcomb. We'll be doing double duty that night, getting ready for Georgia and LSU in the SEC Championship game, big preview of that. Also getting ready for the start of the early signing period. Jeff Sintel revealing a lot of the secrets about how this class is going to come together. We'll do all of that Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners. Please make plans to be with us for it. It's going to be our biggest Marlowe's event of the year. I cannot wait for it. And by the way, huge congratulations going out. We've been doing our Marlowe's VIP giveaway over the course of the last few days. We said yesterday was the last day to register for your chance to win. Today is the day that the winner is going to be announced. Can we show folks the winner here? Let me give a shout out to Suzanne Akins from Orlando, the winner of our Marlowe's VIP giveaway. So congratulations, Suzanne. Really proud to announce you as the winner. Can't wait to see you this Thursday at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners. It's going to be a great time. Jeff Sintel, good stuff with you. We appreciate you being here. I'll see you tomorrow from Before the Hedges at 3 p.m. And, of course, Thursday night, 6 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners. We just appreciate your time.
Yeah, guys, a couple real quick rapid fires. Looks like LSU visit for Caleb Williams, the five-star quarterback for 2021, went very, very well.
Yep.
You got to imagine he had a great moment there in front of that crowd, seeing the appreciation for Joe Burrow. That's something we'll jump into Hedges about this week. Also, Mikey Henderson Jr., the four-star athlete. You can find this information on the forum. He has made his decision. He will announce it on December the 18th. He doesn't need to take any more unofficial visits in the month of December to Georgia or Oklahoma. And he will enroll early in January. So that decision also comes December 18th.
All right.
You've got Micah Morris, the four-star offensive tackle out of Brunswick in the 2021 class. He's another guy that has made his decision that he's going to announce the next couple of weeks to honor his father on his birthday. And that's a big potential target for the 2021 class. Nationally rated elite offensive lineman out of Camden County in Kingsland.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. Thanks so much for your time.
You got it.
This is SEC Through.
All right, we're going to go cruise around the SEC courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And boy, in this time of year, it's cold outside. I've got a big bundled up jacket in the morning. I'm like so many of you, I need a vacation. I want to go somewhere nice when I go on vacation. There's no nicer vacation than you can take. No more fun, bold vacation choice than our friends at Royal Caribbean, especially right now as they celebrate being 50 years bold here. We're kind of redefining the status of what a cruise vacation is going back to 1969. One of the ways they're celebrating is by introducing a completely amplified version of some of the ships that maybe you've been on in the past. One of those may be Oasis of the Seas. Let me tell you, this amplification has made Oasis of the Seas bigger and better, whether it be, you know, Ultimate Abyss, which is like the tallest water slide at sea, all the cool like entertainment dining options that they've added, music hall, the Lyman Coconut, which is like three stories tall, Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. I mean, this is an unbelievable, unforgettable experience. And if you watch on video, you're going to see some examples of this yourself, whether it be like, you know, carousels or, you know, simulated surfing experience. I mean, it's just unbelievable experience. And if you're not able to see us on video each and every day, then check out RoyalCaribbean.com. Not only can you kind of go window shopping for some of the great amplified ships and some of the other great ships in the fleet there for Royal Caribbean, you could also get in touch with a travel advisor to help you book your travel. So it's RoyalCaribbean.com to find out more about that. Big story around college football today is the release of the College Football Playoff Top 25 again tonight. And this is obviously the calm before the storm, given what's going to happen after Championship Saturday. But I guess, and it seems like this happens more often than not, where weeks and weeks prior, it seems like there's like total chaos. And then the closer you kind of get to the end, things kind of fall in place. Fairly or not, they seem to be falling in place right now. You know, Ohio State's going to play the Big Ten title game as a pretty big favorite over Wisconsin. They've already beaten them once. It seems easy to pick Ohio State in this game. And seems easy to assume then that they kind of go coasting into the College Football Playoff. Clemson's going to be a big favorite in the ACC title game. I'm not sure who they're playing. I guess it's Virginia Tech. They're going to, you know, or is it? I couldn't care less who won the ACC Coastal. It's a complete waste of time to even follow it. But Clemson will obviously coast in the ACC title game. They'll be in the College Football Playoff. And then you start thinking about, well, the third spot's going to be for the SEC champion. That's going to either be LSU, who's obviously favored over Georgia. And then you start debating that fourth spot. And if Georgia beats LSU, well, all of a sudden it becomes kind of an interesting look of, well, is it LSU now making it as a one-loss team at large that didn't win a conference? Do you open the door, assuming that Utah wins the Pac-12? Do they make the playoff? Is it Oklahoma now suddenly kind of rising up, seemingly got some help by the committee by how much Baylor got boosted in the rankings last week? Is Oklahoma now, after having just the one loss to Kansas State, but a string of close wins after that, including a come-from-behind, 25-point come-from-behind win against Baylor, is Oklahoma back in this? Here is the way that I think it's going to go. I think, obviously, Ohio State, Clemson look like locks, not so much because I think they'll get in even if they lose. I just don't expect them to lose in their conference championship games. I think the winner of the SEC gets in, obviously, between LSU and Georgia, and I would currently favor Utah over Oklahoma. This is one of those areas in which I hate to be conspiratorial because it just seems, you know, kind of dumb and sort of Alex Jones-ish, but there is a degree to which I think it's the Pac-12's turn to be in the playoffs. We've seen either a Pac-12 or a Big 12 team in the playoff each and every year, but dating back to the first playoff in 2014, there has been no year in which we've had both the Pac-12 and the Big 12 make the college football playoff. Those two conferences, for better or worse, seem to always be fighting over the same spot in the playoff, and given the fact that it's been, what, since 2016, since a Pac-12 team has been in, I believe it's that league's turn. I don't know if Utah is better than Oklahoma. I don't know how you would know that one way or another, but it certainly seems like there's some momentum for Utah, assuming that it's a one-loss conference champion, to make the playoff over Oklahoma. As I said before, and the one thing that I'll keep saying again, there seems to be this real common belief that, oh, if you're Clemson, if you're Oklahoma, if you're LSU, you've already done enough. You've got nothing to worry about. You'll still make the playoff no matter what. But your 12-0 regular season punches your ticket for the playoff. You've got nothing to worry about. One way or another, if that kind of chaos, now Georgia beating LSU is not exactly an example of chaos, but Wisconsin beating Ohio State, something along those lines, I'm just not quite so sure it's easy to rubber stamp these teams in who lost their final game, postseason game, to get in. Now, they did put Alabama in the playoff 2017 after it lost its final regular season game, but if we have weird losses, if we have teams that are expected to coast who somehow get tripped up, I don't know that the college football playoff announcement at that point in time would be quite as much rubber stamped as some of us might think. By the way, one more cruiser on the SEC story I want to get to, courtesy of Royal Caribbean here for a moment. So Dan Mullen, I think, the Florida coach, would be a terrific, you know those Salvation Army buckets, they're almost like kettles that are outside of all the department stores and everything else this time of year. Dan Mullen would be great standing beside one of those, ringing the bell. I think what the Salvation Army does is really, really important. And obviously, it's a Christmas tradition to have those stationed all over the place. I think that Mullen would be great ringing the bell out there doing the Salvation Army thing. Let me tell you why. There is nobody, apparently, that's better at asking for charity than what Mullen is. I don't know if you saw his recent quote. He talked about how Baylor jumped way up in the rankings last week because they beat, what, like a six-win team, whatever. And he says, well, we just did the same thing, referencing what happened against Florida State. Let's see how high we jump up in the college football playoff rankings here this week. Now, on the substance, I kind of agree with what Mullen said a little bit. I think it was ridiculous they moved Baylor up in the rankings quite as much as they did. But to think that Dan Mullen has now been reduced to essentially begging for charity, hey, move us up in the rankings. We want to go up. Yes, we lost the games that mattered, including the showdown with Georgia. It was supposed to be our coming out party. We lost that game, but move us up in these rankings. We want to be able to do that. Kind of a bad look from Mullen there in that regard. But nonetheless, asking for that charity, I don't guess he's necessarily going to get that. But anyway, we'll make that your cruiser on the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And we're scheduled to have former Georgia receiver Sean Bailey joining us. Sean's got a great story to tell. He's always a terrific analytical mind at looking at the position that he wants to play, the wide receiver position. He's got a little bit of a scheduling conflict right now, so we're going to try to catch up with Sean here coming up in just a couple of moments. Before that, though, let's celebrate some guys who've had some success in the NFL. It's our top dogs of the week from the NFL. It's brought to you by friends at Kroger. Couple names to mention here. By the way, pretty impressive performance here for Roquan Smith as of late. He's really been on a string of double-digit tackle performances. Nice day from him on Thanksgiving against the Lions. 15 tackles, 2 sacks. as the Bears get a win in Detroit against the Lions 24-20. And Todd Gurley, man, I know he's dealt with some health issues. He's been banged up a bit, but he finds a way to keep it going, including 10 carries, 95 yards. The Rams got a win they very much needed, 34-7 against the Cardinals. So congratulations to both those guys, Roquan Smith, Todd Gurley. They were our top dogs of the week, courtesy of Kroger. And by the way, Kroger, really, really fun here this week. Speaking of former dogs in the NFL, a guy who made a big name for himself in the NFL and has an incredible story of overcoming adversity and just a really interesting guy all the way around, Muhammad Massaqua, the former Georgia receiver, going to be at two Krogers here this week. Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. is going to be at the Kroger in Bon Air, Georgia. That's Georgia Highway 96 in Bon Air, so you can check that out there. Also, the following day from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Kroger in Athens on U.S. Highway 29 North. So Bon Air on Thursday, Athens on Friday, former Georgia wide receiver Muhammad Massaqua going to be at both those places. Really, really fun chance. Going to catch up with a great former dog. He'll tell some great stories, have a really good time, and obviously you can celebrate one of the great careers in recent UGA history. And you know that Muhammad's really, really excited about the chance to see the dogs win on Saturday. I'm sure that's a great conversation to have with him there, too, as he signs some autographs and poses some pictures. And, you know, Kroger's always doing fun things for dog fans this time of year. The Muhammad Massaqua appearance is another example of that. And, by the way, if you want to go to dognation.com, I know you can find some more information on that too. So we had a busy week coming up here. Don't forget, each and every night at 6 p.m., we've got Road to Atlanta this week where we're previewing the game. We're looking at everything that's kind of happened during the day, the practice preparations in Baton Rouge, what's happening in Athens, what Georgia coaches and players are having to say about all of this. We're kind of talking about all of that each night at 6 p.m., Road to Atlanta presented by Kroger. And as I said before, Thursday, 6 p.m., the Marlowe's and Peachtree Corners return there with myself, John Stinchcomb, the former UGA All-American, and Jeff Sintel. We'll be talking about early signing period recruiting stuff, getting ready for the SEC Championship game on Saturday. It is a very busy time around Dog Nation this week. We appreciate you being a part of all of it. You're on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door today, and, of course, throughout the week on Road to Atlanta, presented by Kroger. And with that said, let's get ready to do the Gatorator Updater. So, fun stuff. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Sean Bailey later on this week because I do like having him on. We've got a lot of other special guests lined up for the week, so stay tuned for all of that. We're going to have a really good time. And by the way, speaking of Dan Mullen, we talked about before, a good chance to remind him of the reason why he's not ranked any higher, the reason why he's not going to be going to a college football playoff bowl, the reason why he will not be a prominent discussion tonight when the playoff top 25 is re-released once again. That's because Mullen took it on the chin to the dogs once again this past year. Continuous streak. Boy, that looks really good when you see it on paper. How about 1,130 days? That's how long it's been since the Florida Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. It's our Gatorator Updater. And even on a week when Georgia has a lot more important things to take care of, punching tickets to the college football playoff and everything else, there's still a little bit of time to pause and reflect on how good it feels to be a Gator hater and how good it is to know that Georgia is on top of Florida once again. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.